this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing in the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And, well, for the next hour, they're going to be those of Paul Spite, and we're going to be talking about his book, Climate Change a la Gore. Now, while we're waiting to get Paul on the line, I want to remind our listeners that there will be a meeting up in Santa Rosa at the Doubletree Hotel on all day Saturday, this coming Saturday. I'll be speaking actually twice, and they're going to be Jerome Corsi and Phyllis Lafley, and a great lineup of speakers, and of course of visitors as well. But if you're interested in going to that program, well, you have to have reservations. There's going to be lunch and supper served, and the telephone number to call would be 707-539-8393. That's 707-539-8393, and I think you'll find it a fascinating, fascinating program. Well, anyway, let's get to Paul Spite, who's going to be with us this evening. And he's written a fascinating book. It was basically going into the background of Al Gore. And Al Gore, of course, has written a book on really on more or less philosophy, on reason, says that the best way to manipulate people is to get them fearful. Well, of course, that's exactly what Al Gore has been doing. He's been trying to convince us that we face a major catastrophe if we do not do something about global warming. And global warming, he says, is caused by increase of the CO2 in the atmosphere, and that's produced by man burning fossil fuels. Now, of course, people have forgotten that it was Al Gore that did everything he could to oppose nuclear energy, so that there would be a necessity that if we were going to have electricity to burn fossil fuels. But he never talks about his opposition to nuclear energy, which would solve the problem if the problem was real. I believe the problem is not real. I've talked to some of the leading scientists in the country, and they all agree that although there is global warming, it is taking place. It's been taking place for several hundred years. The atmosphere goes in. We have periods of global warming. We have periods of global cooling. And 30 years ago, Al Gore was leading the charge, saying that global cooling was going to destroy our society. I don't know who he blamed it on at that time. Now he says global warming, and yet, of course, this has been the coldest winter we've had in decades, just this last winter. And have you noticed that Al Gore hasn't been around? Now they've changed it from global warming to climate change, so that whether we have global warming or global cooling, we can blame it on CO2 emissions. And of course, the real reason behind this whole scam is they want to destroy Western civilization. They really want to force the United States to go into the Kyoto Protocol, to sign an agreement to cut back our use of carbon fuels, that would be coal and oil and natural gas, to the levels they were in 1990, and then even before that, and by so doing to prevent us from producing electricity and power so that they can destroy the industrial base of our nation. That's what it's really all about. It's part of a program that was designed back in 1991 and 1992 when a group of very, very powerful people met on Prince Charles' yacht and, of course, laid out the plan that was presented to the Second Earth Summit in 1992 in Rio de Janeiro. Well, let's get to our special guest this evening, Paul. Hi, Paul, are you there?
Yes, sir, sure.
All right, fine. We'll be with you in just a moment here. And I think you'll be fascinated by Paul's story. Did a great job on his book, and incidentally, we're carrying the book. It's called Climate Change, a la Gore. Well, Paul, why don't you tell us a little bit about how it was that you came to write the book? And remember, this is a different audience, so you can repeat the things you've said on previous programs. Don't worry about that.
Okay. Basically, the impetus for the book came when I had read two articles in Time magazine back to back. The first was an article on, it was called The Last Temptation of Al Gore, basically comparing Al Gore with the very title to some type of a messiah. The second article was and that was a little disturbing. The second article was about a new book that he had written called The Assault on Reason. And that really bothered me a great deal, because the little bit that I knew about his documentary, it seemed like he was basically talking about his own documentary. So I bought the book, The Assault on Reason. I bought the documentary, An Inconvenient Truth. And by the time I went through them, basically line item by line item, I was actually more than a little bit upset. He had come to the point of realizing that this was, in my opinion, completely based on falsehood. And not only that, but it represented a terrible economic threat to the country. So basically the book was written, called A Climate Crisis a la Gore, was an attempt to alert the American people to what was going on. And basically to lay it out in a generalized enough fashion, but also include enough scientific evidence, as well as listing the players involved in and how much money they're making from the fact that we believe them, in an effort to try and mobilize America to call their congressmen and tell them that we do not want this carbon cap and trade legislation being passed.
And of course, really, Al Gore knows exactly what he's doing in his book, Assault on Reason. He talked about how you could mobilize people to do things by creating fear. And yet that's exactly what he does with his video, his motion picture, certainly The Inconvenient Truth. And this, he was actually given, supposedly, the Nobel Prize for his efforts and for his film. And this shows just how fraudulent the Nobel Prizes really are. Because his movie was basically one misstatement and one lie after another. And, of course, Paul does an excellent job in his book of pointing out the things that Al Gore said that just are not true. But, you know, it really doesn't matter how ridiculous things are. If you say them often enough and you have enough experts coming in to say them, even though they're lying, people will eventually come to believe. And that's the frightening thing. But what this is really all about, as Paul says, is an attack on our society, an attack on our way of living, an attack on the industrial base of America. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is Paul Spite. His book is Climate Change a la Gore. Climate Change a la Gore. Now, Paul, would you like to get into some of the things that that Al Gore wrote in his book, Assault on Reason, that really upset you, that suddenly made you aware of the fact that he was simply lying? Because what he said in his book is really true. It is simply what he has presented to the American public that is not true.
In the book, basically, what he does is he does a very good job of arguing that America's ability to reason has been greatly weakened by basically our reliance upon information coming not from reading, but from multimedia presentations, whether that's the internet, television, movies, what have you. And then he talks about the ways that you bypass the cognitive thinking by going with images straight into the mind and such. And he does a very, very good job of that. What the typical format in his book, Assault on Reason, is that he starts from a basic truth, and then he extrapolates from there. And essentially, the book was an attack on President Bush's administration, that being neither here nor there. But the interesting thing was that everything that he calls out as foul in the use of those multimedia or propaganda campaigns. For example, you spoke on the use of the politics of fear. That is basically, that says that if I make you afraid enough, you'll surrender either assets or liberty to me in order for me to sell you a solution. And that's the basis really for, like, for example, life insurance and health insurance. If I don't think I'm going to die, I don't think I'm going to get sick, then I'm not going to buy your insurance unless you can frighten me into it. So he talks about things like that. Talks about the use of ridicule, talks about a number of, and those are all listed in the first section of the book. But what really caught my attention was the way that then when I began to analyze his documentary, he basically took everything that he was crying foul on in claiming that President Bush, his administration, misused it, and he applied exactly those same techniques in his documentary in order to basically drive the people of America to a conclusion that is actually completely inconsistent with the facts.
In fact, we've seen this with President Bush, who said, well, we have to stay over there fighting, fighting over in Iraq, because we either have to fight the terrorists in Iraq or fight them on the streets of New York. Which would you want? And of course, I think most people would agree we'd rather fight the terrorists over there in Iraq rather than fighting them here. But the trouble is that before we attacked Iraq and destabilized the country there, there weren't any al-Qaeda terrorists in the Iraq. Saddam Hussein would not allow them. So we did not go over there to attack, or to neutralize the terrorists. There weren't any terrorists in Iraq until we went in there and destroyed the infrastructure of that society. And then, of course, al-Qaeda representatives came from Saudi Arabia and from Pakistan. These were financed by those two countries. They probably came from all over the world, people who had been indoctrinated in this radical form of Islam, but in large part by the Central Intelligence Agency and by the textbooks that were provided by the United States Agency for International Development, promoting this radical Islamic belief. Well, anyway, so George Bush creates fear, and that's how we justify the war in Iraq. Al Gore creates fear, and that's, of course, how we're to justify having to cut back on our utilization of carbon, because the solution to the electricity problem would have been nuclear energy, but Al Gore opposed that when he was the Vice President of the United States, and I'm sure he still opposes it. He doesn't want a solution, he wants the problem, because only with the problem can we get the solution he wants, and that is, of course, the destruction of the industrial base, the remaining industrial base in the United States. Well, would you like to get into some of the things that he actually did with his video or his motion picture of the going into the inconvenient truth? What was there in that just wasn't truth at all?
you don't have enough time.
Well, but you go ahead, because we've got an hour to fill up, and so we want you to tell us what was in that motion picture, because I thought your explanation was excellent in your book.
Okay, first of all, there's a Lord Monckton from England that actually did an incredible job of pointing out 35 scientific errors. Before I get into any of those, I just in 9 of those were used in England to make a ruling in favor of a parent that basically said the parents sued the school system because they were shown an inconvenient truth, and they have a law in England that you cannot show anything that consists of political indoctrination to school children. And the ruling of the judge, based on just the 9 errors, not the 35, was that the film could not be shown to school children unless it was accompanied by someone to tell them the truth about the errors in the film. Fascinating ruling. However, just setting those aside for a moment, just logic errors, okay, just pure logic. Like, for example, he talks about the fact that when the ice melts in the Arctic, in Greenland and Antarctica, now this is completely irrelevant to the fact that it's not melting but getting larger and thicker. But he says, when it melts and the sea level raises 20 feet, which the IPCC says 2.5 inches, but Al Gore changed that to 20 feet. He says that, we're going to have flooding and we're going to cover Manhattan and Florida's going to go away and so on and so forth, and flood islands and kill entire populations and so on and so forth. That's the fear factor. But the truth is, and this is an experiment that your listeners can do at home, if they take a glass and they fill it with ice, and then they fill the glass with water up to a certain level, just take a marker and mark on the side of the glass where the level of the water is, and then wait till the ice melts. Ice takes up more space when it's ice than it does when it melts and it's water. And you'll find that the level of the water will decrease as the ice melts, not increase. A little bit of a logic problem there. So the truth is, if all of the ice that's sitting in the water in the world melted, it would drastically lower water levels, and it's probably a good thing that the ice that's on the land also melts and runs into the ocean so that the water level stays the same, which, coincidentally, it stayed the same for the last 2,500 years. It's interesting that Scripture says that God set the limit, set the boundaries for the water and for the land, and that's pretty much exactly right. That's just a small logic error. But then you get into scientific errors, and you get into, we mentioned the difference between 20 feet and 2.5 inches. He says in his movie that Pacific islands have drowned. There's been mass evacuations of island populations. There have been none, absolutely none. He claims that the ocean conveyor will stop, but actually weakening has not seen, and since 1980s it's been getting stronger. But the biggest one is the idea that carbon dioxide drives temperature changes. Just a huge fallacy, because even in Mr. Gore's own graph that was in the documentary, if you look at it closely, you can see that temperature changes actually precede carbon dioxide changes by anywhere from 200 to 800 years.
And of course, what he does in this movie, if it's well worthwhile looking at to see how they distort the truth, they have two separate graphs. They do not superimpose them. They're one's on top of the other, but they're not superimposed at all. And Sidney, he's pointing out that the carbon dioxide level goes up and the temperature goes up. The truth of the matter is, the temperature goes up and then the carbon dioxide level goes up. Now, why would that be? Well, because the largest source of carbon dioxide in the world today is the ocean. And the ocean then, when it's cool, absorbs carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. When the ocean heats, why, it gives off carbon dioxide. And since we do have an element of warming because of the cyclic chains of our temperatures going back to probably somewhere the 16th to 17th century, why it's like actually having a bottle of pop, you know, carbonated beverage, and if you were to heat that bottle, it would explode. Why? Because the carbon dioxide is coming off. And of course, the same thing happens with the ocean. The ocean then releases carbon dioxide, and the carbon dioxide levels throughout the centuries, throughout the millennium, have followed the rise in temperature, and there have been many rises in temperatures over the last 6,000 years or so that we can measure, and time and again, first of all, the temperature goes up, and then the level of CO2 goes up. Is that right, Paul?
That is true, and actually for a great number of reasons. I mean, a warmer temperature, more moisture in the air produces more plants. Plants produce CO2. I mean, and the more plants there are, the more that burn when you have forest fires. Another huge production of CO2. I mean, there's just the ice caps melting, releasing CO2. I mean, it's just astonishing. We only contribute about 2.5% of the greenhouse of the greenhouse gases, and there is such a minute amount of the atmosphere. We have no potential of even remotely affecting temperature. Of course, that would be a little inconvenient to the purpose for which this whole charade is being propagated. But want to just say something just real quick, because you had mentioned about the temperature increases. Something interesting that I learned at that conference in New York, there has been, which I knew prior to going in, there has only been 0.6 degrees of Celsius of warming since 1900. I mean, regardless of all the claims that are being made, that's been the limit. We lost all that last year. We're back to 1900 levels today.
And of course, I did read an article, I've forgotten whether it was in the New York Times or maybe the Washington Post, about that conference you went to, and they ridiculed the people there that felt that the global warming was not a terrible hazard to us. And but of course, you would expect that, because certainly the Washington Post and the New York Times and Time and Newsweek and U.S. News and World Report and all of the major media are controlled. People are going along with this scam. Why? Because this is part of an effort to destroy the infrastructure of our society. And if you could get us to be foolish enough to cut back on our use of fossil fuels and then continue to block the development of nuclear energy, claiming that, of course, we don't know what to do with the spent fuel, or we could have a nuclear explosion, or all the explanations that are used to oppose nuclear energy, nuclear energy is the answer to the problem. And having nothing to do with global warming, but it does cut back on certainly the emissions, and it's much cheaper. And the reason we don't have nuclear energy in this country, whereas the rest of the world has it, is because of people like Al Gore, who have an intense desire to destroy the land of the free and the home of the brave. Well, Paul, certainly I agree with you. What did you think of that conference back there that you attended? You were actually asked to come back as a speaker, weren't you?
No, sir. I was originally asked to come as a panelist.
Panelist, okay.
And I gave my seat up to a gentleman from the Cornwall Alliance for Evangelicals. I was actually tremendously honored, honestly, and blessed. I spoke with one of my sisters about the conference when I got back, and she asked what I thought about it, and I said, well, honestly, I mean, I said I got to listen to two straight days of expert testimony in six different subject areas, and I said, and there comes a point in your life when you get around knowledge that if you're smart, you just hush up and listen and learn.
Well, I think, Chris, being a panelist actually is to be a speaker in many respects. Anyway, you gave up your seat to someone else. I thought it was a very gracious thing for you to have done.
Oh, it was an open forum. I mean, anybody had an opportunity to speak, you know, at the mic. I did a few times, but that conference was not about me. I mean, basically what that was a gathering of world leaders and policymakers and some of the top climate Scientologists in the world and economists to basically try and put a stop to this nonsense and to present a unified front to the world and to say, enough is enough. There's no truth in this. You've heard the saying, the emperor's not wearing any clothes.
Well, I think the important thing to realize is that this is part of a much larger plan to destroy the industrial base of our nation. Once people understand that, once people understand that if you look at greenhouse gases, the vast majority of greenhouse gases, certainly well over 95%, are water. And then, of course, the component, which is CO2, has really gone up from about 280 parts per million to 380 parts per million parts of the atmosphere. Now, does that really make the sense that this is going to create all these problems? And, of course, it really doesn't. Nobody ever points these things out. Actually, methane, which, of course, is expelled from the intestines of cows, is much more of a factor as a greenhouse gas than CO2 is. But they're not going to tell you that because, of course, they don't want us to. They know that the American people aren't going to go along with killing off all those cows. So they've got to blame CO2, and yet there is no scientific evidence that CO2 is contributing in any way to global warming. And certainly we know that every time in the past where the temperature has gone up, why the CO2 has gone up, but only after the global warming has taken place. Well, certainly, how are we going to get the information out to people, Paul? Because there's still an awful lot of people, like school children, that are being indoctrinated in this. So many of the people, if they watch television, they watch CBS, they listen to Al Gore and watch his film, they honestly believe that mankind is creating all this carbon, we're going to destroy the planet. It's an inconvenient truth. We've got to save the planet for unborn generations. That's why we have to destroy the industrial base of America. How are we going to get people to understand this is really what it's about?
Well, I honestly do not know. I hate to say it that way. I really thought that, for example, that this book would be of interest to people. Thus far, it has been of almost no interest. I don't think that people are going to react until they are sitting without a job, with a huge cut in their standard of living. It's almost as though the American people can't be troubled to turn away from entertainment. I don't know how to explain it.
Hold that thought. We'll be right in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and Chris, we're talking about the book, The Climate Change Allegory. Our guest is Paul Speight, who wrote the book, and he's published the book, and of course we do carry the book. We think it's an important book, and we want you to have access to it, because he certainly goes into the background of Al Gore's writing, going into the Assault on Reason, and he's written a whole book on the Assault on Reason, and he explains that the American people are being misled. And yet, of course, what most people don't understand is one of the people who's primarily responsible for the assault on the reason of the American people is none other than Al Gore. Al Gore has a big mansion where he actually burns far more electricity than probably six or eight other common people. He has an SUV, or maybe it's his wife who has the SUV. But certainly Al Gore, of course, says, well, if I'm going to buy carbon credits, and that will neutralize of course, my big home and all the electricity that we use, of course, requires burning of fossil fuels. But, Sydney, what's the background on this? Basically, isn't Al Gore involved in a scam to sell carbon credits that gives him a lot of money? What's this story all about?
Let's go ahead and talk a little bit about profit.
All right.
Because there's a tremendous amount of money changing hands by the fact that we believe this. But just let me, to make sure I get this point in if I can. Al Gore has started a investment banking company. It's headquartered in London. He's a partner with a gentleman by the name of, whose last name is Blood, which I thought was kind of interesting combined with Gore. But I think it's David Blood.
Blood and Gore. Right. Go ahead.
So basically what this company does is it buys up what it calls sustainable companies. Now, that term is a term that's being thrown around a lot. But let me back up and discuss just for a second carbon credits. Because what basically happens is that you, under the legislation being proposed, the Lieberman-Warner bill that's being proposed in Congress, and they're ready to vote on it, basically they will assign a amount of pollution that each industry in America, at least they're going to start with industry, in Europe they're actually going trying to target homes now. It started with industry too, but we'll just start with industry. They give each industry an amount that they can pollute, and then basically if you're going to pollute more than that, you have to buy the right to do it, and if you're going to pollute less than that, then you have the right to sell that difference in pollution. That's a carbon credit. Okay? But if you're going to pollute more than that, what you have to do is you have to pay somebody else for a project, to do a project that is going to supposedly decrease CO2 output elsewhere in the world, whether that's planting forest or doing a wind farm or you know, to replace a fossil fuel electric plant, whatever that is. So what you do is you pay a sustainable company for a project that will offset your carbon output. So far, Al Gore's company, as of the initial research into this book, had bought 19 of those companies. So basically, when those laws get passed, I don't know how many companies his investment corporation owns now, but when this law gets passed, we're going to be paying extra money on every single product being made by the industry that survives this scheme, so that that money can be paid to sustainable companies to do projects elsewhere in the world, which there'll be no oversight of those projects and no proof that they've been actually done, but sustainable companies just like the ones that are owned by Mr. Gore and his partner.
Now, isn't there a lot of money to be made doing this for Mr. Gore, having sold us the idea, this threat, this terrible threat of global warming that's going to destroy our cities, cities are going to be submerged. I've seen pictures in textbooks of New York City, and all you can see sticking above the water is the top of the Empire State Building, and they're convincing our children that our cities are all going to be submerged because of global warming. It's a lie. But it doesn't matter whether it's alive. Told often enough, people will believe it. And those pictures in the textbooks are implanted in children's minds, and they honestly believe this lie. So isn't Al Gore going to make an awful lot of money out of this?
Well, according to the, I'm trying to find the exact, the Carbon Finance Organization, who lobbied in Washington about to try and push the global warming legislation through last March, this represents a cash flow of $100 billion a year from the United States to undeveloped nations.
Another $100 billion a year.
$100 billion a year flowing out of the United States.
How much of that is Al Gore going to get? Do we have any idea?
I have no idea, sir.
All right, but he's going to come out doing very, very well financially.
Yeah, he'll do pretty well.
And people don't understand that we're being had. And it is a combination of the controlled media, certainly the environmental movement, which is funded by the large oil companies, certainly many of our major corporations, many of our major universities, and they're all lying to the American people. Global warming is occurring because of climate change, but of course it is not caused by man's activity. Well, Paul, our guest this evening is Paul Spaight, and we're talking about his book, climate change a la Gore. And, of course, one of the interesting things is now, since we seem to be entering into a period of global cooling, they don't talk about global warming so much. Now they talk about, climate change. Have you noticed that, Paul, that they seem to have changed the thrust of their conversation, the wording of the threat? It's climate change is the threat?
Oh, the vocabulary keeps changing constantly. When they first started talking about the warming aspect, they said there was an increased strength of storms and hurricanes. But when that didn't happen, then they changed it to an increased frequency of hurricanes. But now that hasn't happened. So now it's changes in the distribution patterns of storms. That means anything. Just like changes in climate. If it rains and then the sun comes out, that must be because of global warming. I mean, it's interesting. You almost wish they would have just said from the beginning, inconvenience. Because that's basically what it is. Anything that inconveniences you must be a reason to fear.
And I think it's really so important for people to understand that what we are witnessing today is one of the greatest scams ever perpetrated on a civilized group of people. But people accept this to be true. After all, would CBS lie to us? Would Scott Pelley, who's been down to the Antarctic on several occasions, talking to people down there, and he talks to the scientists, and they claim, of course, we're getting this tremendous melting of the Arctic ice cap, and they even see pictures, these large cliffs of ice, and then they're collapsing into the ocean, and they say, see, why, of course, the ice cap there in Antarctica is actually melting. But the truth of the matter is, the amount of ice in many of the areas is actually increasing. So how do they explain that? Well, they don't try to explain it. Then they change the subject to the polar bears. The polar bears are going to become extinct, and they show us pictures of some poor, forlorn-looking polar bear on a little block of ice, and the ice is melting, and you know very well that the polar bear is going to fall into the ocean and drown, and the polar bears are becoming extinct. There's not one bit of truth in that. You can certainly go up on the internet and Google that in, and you'll find out that the number of polar bears is actually increasing, and polar bears, of course, can swim in the ocean for, 50 or 60 miles to get to a place where there's seals, which, of course, they just love to feast on. So all of this, they use pictures, they use television, they use the images that they create on the screen to influence our thought and make us believe what is truly a lie. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess as Paul Spite, his book, the Climate Change a la Gore, and we do carry that book. And Paul, do you have a website or anything you'd like to get out, tell people about what you're doing?
The book, it's called A Climate Crisis a la Gore. It can be found on Amazon.com, but also can be obtained through your show there. I just wanted to touch. You mentioned the polar bears and the ice cliffs melting into the sea. This is just too good to pass up. The polar bears, that's one of the facts that the British court threw out the documentary out of the public schools on. He claims there's polar bears dying. There have been four polar bears that they have a record of. They were killed in a storm. Had nothing to do with global warming. They drowned in high seas, not warm seas. And the second thing, that picture that he shows in his documentary of the ice cliffs falling off, that was actually a picture of the one glacier that is rapidly growing. And that's the reason why the ice cliffs were falling off. They break off as the face of the glacier expands. When glaciers are melting, they don't break off. They just retreat.
And, of course, they talk about how certainly the ice cap over the Arctic is melting away. Well, because we have some global warming, and it may not be as dense as it was before, but usually in the wintertime it freezes over again. They talk about the snows of Kilimanjaro, but, of course, they melt during the summer and they come back during the winter. And it depends upon the time of year that you actually take them. Although
last
the snows...
Last year?
Yes, go ahead.
Last year, the Arctic ice cap was the smallest it's ever been in the summer, which got a lot of news coverage. It was also the largest it has been in recent history in the winter. They got no coverage.
And, of course, they don't take the pictures in the winter. They take the pictures in the summer.
Yeah.
And those pictures are indelibly imprinted on our minds. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295 here in the Central Coast of California, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295. If you have a question for Paul, who's done a great job in writing a very straightforward book, Climate Crisis, Allegor. That's climate, is that right?
Yes, sir.
Climate Crisis, Allegor. Well, anyway, we do carry the book, and because I thought it was important people have access to it so they can really begin to understand how the media is controlled in America. And, of course, we are being sold a bill of goods that could end up destroying the manufacturing foundation of our country. Well, was the attack on our industries brought up at the conference you attended, Paul?
Yes, it actually was. I think the most gripping thing that I heard was I had a chance to listen to a presentation by Václav Klaus, the president of Czechoslovakia. And they were not previously under the Kyoto Protocol until the Eastern European countries joined the European Union and came under that protocol. And one of the comments he made was when they joined that protocol, basically all of their heavy industry did not decline. It virtually disappeared overnight.
Was this because, of course, they had to cut back on electricity consumption?
It was because they couldn't match meet the carbon output restrictions.
All right, but did that have to do with electricity production or what?
In part, yeah. I mean, none of their power plants met that kind of production.
Okay, fine. So basically, because they couldn't use their power plants, then of course they had to shut them down, and that just shut down the industry.
Oh, absolutely. And then when the heavy industry went, most of the light and medium industry that supplied it, of course, went. But the gripping thing is when he told me that gross domestic product, or the standard of living, which is that's what that measures basically, had declined by a little over 40%.
And probably the standard of living in Czechoslovakia wasn't that high before, was it?
Yeah, it was very, very, very bad to begin with. And he was basically there at the conference trying to tell the rest of the world, don't let this happen to your countries.
Yeah, not a word of that, of course, in the controlled media. And they had their people there. They've written articles about it, but they were all derogatory of the conference.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think one of the terms was flat earthers.
Right.
And, you know, something just interesting, and I think you will appreciate this knowing a little bit about your belief system. There's a term for people who supposedly deny the facts. They call them deniers. I'm talking about people who don't believe in man-made global warming. But here's the interesting thing. When you deny something, what you're actually denying is something that is the truth or the actual facts or actual history. But what is interesting is the claims that are being made by the global warming crowd fly directly contrary to every measurable occurrence, every measurable thing in climate, and so on and so forth. So the term denier is actually probably better applied to those who proclaim this global warming theory, and I think probably realist would be a better term to those who are saying, stop, guys, look at the facts. Nothing in the real world agrees with what you're saying.
In fact, it's certainly the scientists, of course, who go along with this, those who want to keep their jobs. If you come out and tell the truth, you're going to lose your job. And that's why so many of the government scientists are going right along with the agenda. You know, and of course, the real purpose is this attack on the infrastructure and the viability of American industry, American life. Somebody had called in and wanted to know how carbon footprints are being monitored in Europe for individual homes. And, of course, the carbon footprint really is, could only be measured by the amount of electricity that you were consuming, the amount of natural gas you were consuming, and, of course, whether or not you were burning wood. They want us to stop using natural gas. They want us to stop using electricity. They want us to stop burning either coal or fuel in our homes to keep us warm. And what they really want to do is impoverish the American people. And, of course, if you read the Global Biodiversity Assessment that came out of the Second Earth Summit back in 1992, and incidentally, we do have a summary of that in my Sustainable Development syllabus. You can buy the original document. It was published by Cambridge University Press. It's over 1,100 pages. It's long and tedious, but one of our friends that summarizes for us. And basically what they want to do, they say, you know, with a population of over 6 billion people, we're either going to have to markedly limit the number of people in the world down to about 1 or 2 billion, or if we're going to keep a population of 6 billion people, we're going to have to lower living standards to that of the people who live in Eastern Europe. Well, the people who live in Eastern Europe at the time in 1992 were impoverished. They were poor. They didn't have any electricity regularly. They didn't have heat. They didn't have air conditioning. And that is what this is really all about. Of course, Al Gore will have his air conditioning. He'll have his SUV. He'll have his big home. But for the average individual, they intend to have the common people, of course, lower their living standards. This is what it's really all about. When are the American people going to wake up? What do you think, Paul?
Just something that was interesting, talking to some of the economists at that conference. If that Warner-Lieberman bill passes, the target on that is to reduce, the target goal of that particular bill is to reduce our carbon emissions by 70% by the year 2050. They went back and they equated gross national product, or per capita, per individual, to carbon output. And basically what that represents is a return to the lifestyle that we were enjoying when the Civil War began.
I think that's probably a pretty accurate estimate. People don't understand there are people in Washington, D.C. who have no loyalty to America. Their loyalty is this internationalist dream of a world government where, of course, you have a ruling elite and then everybody else is impoverished and they are really almost returning to a feudalistic system. People say it couldn't happen here, and ladies and gentlemen, of course it can happen here, and that's why it's so important you read Paul's book, that is, of course, The Climate Crisis a la Gore. Climate Crisis a la Gore. Because Al Gore is, of course, pushing a line. Al Gore is not an honorable man. He was part of the group back in 1991 and 1992 that laid out this whole master plan for sustainable development, and this is really what it's all about. Is lowering the living standards and consumption of the people living on Earth today. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. If you have a question for Paul, who's really had an opportunity of meeting a lot of the people involved, but he's done a lot of research, and certainly he's watched Al Gore's movie. He has actually read Al Gore's book, Assault on Reason, and has done an excellent analysis of both the movie and the book in his book. So, and Al Gore's book, he's done an analysis of Al Gore's book and Al Gore's movie in his book, The Climate Crisis a la Gore. Well, certainly, had many of the people back at the conference had a chance to read your book?
The book had been available for about 1 week before the conference, Doctor, so... I was able to make contact with a number of them there. Probably 14 of those groups have my book now and are currently in the process of going through it. And hopefully they'll be able to assist in the distribution of it. There are actually, you know, before I went to that conference, I really felt very much like a lone voice in the wilderness until after when I met all those people at the conference hall. It gave me some courage.
Well, I met a lot of them myself. One of my the French singer was there. I suspect was Sally Balunas there from Harvard.
Yes, sir.
And, of course, she's a good friend. We've had her on a number of times. And we've got Jeannie calling in with a question. Jeannie, do you have a question for our guest?
Yes, I do. In fact, this book is great. It's right down my alley. Remember to save one for me.
All right, fine. I will.
I know in California they're looking at regulating the temperature inside the house. I think it's regarding radio waves control or whatever. And I was wondering, how do they particularly monitor the homes in Europe now?
Do you have any idea what they're doing as far as the homes in Europe at the present time?
I really do not know. I know of ways to do that. I do know that exactly what you said, they can have... they're locked thermostats that are controlled by radio waves that are sent out from a central source, radio frequency sources. They can also regulate thermostats with a central computer system. And you can, for example, you can get a burst of heat, but after about 5 to 10 seconds, the computer and the thermostat automatically resets to at the remote control has it set at.
And I think, Jeannie, we know that with this new law that's coming down in California and some other places, it's only going to be the new homes where they're going to have the control on the thermostat, at least to begin with, so that you won't be able to turn up the heat up in the wintertime or the air conditioning on in the summer, and you'll have to have a... It'll be hot in the summer and cold in the winter. But you see, the elite think that they know what's best for us, and this is not going to influence their homes. It's going to influence our homes.
Why, of course.
Anything else, Jeannie?
Yes, a little tidbit. When I was doing research on the biodiversity assessment report, I came across one fact where it said the methane gases, most of them, came from the guts of the termites in the tropical countries, and I found that fascinating, so I'll just put that out.
We'll just have to outlaw termites, that's all.
That's right. Thank you, Paul.
You're welcome, Gene.
Thank you, Jeannie. And let's go to John, who's calling from Vancouver. Is that Vancouver, British Columbia? Hi, John. And again, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Hi, John. Did you have a question or comment?
I had a question.
Well, go ahead.
Yeah, we had, just in the last year or so, this is referring to the climate change, and I just wanted to know, because I don't know if this is even related to the climate change, but we've had some weather patterns here where we have had, up to 3,000 trees that were old growth. They were like in our park. We have a park down here called Stanley Park, which is in Vancouver, sort of like the north part of the city. And we had, these were trees that were hundreds of years old, and they were just blown down like matchsticks. I've never seen that all my whole life here, and we've been seeing some strange weather patterns with houses being broken down by trees falling on them. We've seen, winds that we've never seen before, and just some really strange weather, and I'm just wondering if this is all tied in with any climate change.
Do you have any thoughts on that at all?
As to whether or not it is tied into climate change, the answer would probably, John, be yes. It is. The question is what would be causing those climate changes. And basically what happens, and you're going to find this, I think, interesting, winds are driven by a difference in the temperature between the poles and the equator. Okay, and the larger the difference in the temperature between those two points, the higher the transfer of energy, which is essentially what wind is. And so what happens actually as the globe warms is that most of the warming occurs in the poles and the least amount of it occurs at the equator. So actually as the warmer the overall climate gets, the less actual wind change that you have. What you probably saw this year was, I don't know if you've been listening to the program, but in this last year we have lost every bit of the warming that supposedly we had obtained. Since the year 1900, I mean, we've had a tremendous drop in overall global temperature. When that happens, of course, and the cooling occurs, you get a larger temperature differential, so you get an increase in the winds being driven by the temperature differential between the poles and the equator.
And that's really very interesting. Let me just intercede here, John. There's a book. It was written in 1970 by one of the most powerful men in the world today. In fact, he's the foreign policy advisor for Barack Obama. His name is Zbigniew Brzezinski. But back in 1970, Brzezinski wrote a book called Between Two Ages, America and the Tectonic Age. And there, in one of the footnotes, he mentioned that in the future, they're going to be able to create storms and droughts and create chronic diseases to disable the enemy. Now, of course, they don't want this information out. You go up on Amazon and you look up, try to buy a copy of the book. I checked it today. The cheapest paperback book was $418, and of course the prices went up from there. The last thing they want is for people to know that they can create weather change. Well, we have a book called Weather Management. We have a four-tape set on weather control. We have a DVD on weather control put together by Bob Fletcher. And they have the ability to create storms and winds and hurricanes and even to guide them. Frightening material, and of course they don't want you to know about it. You might check out that a book on Amazon, Between Two Ages, by Zbigniew Brzezinski, because he knows what's going to happen. He's a member of the Council on Foreign Relations at the Bilderbergers. He organized the Trilateral Commission to David Rockefeller. And his book now is selling for, well, there's only five of them available on Amazon, and the cheapest one is over $400. So you can get the material on weather modification, the book, the four-tape set, or the DVD from Radio Liberty. Anything else, John?
Oh, God bless you. I just wanted to call in because I've seen weather patterns lately in just the last couple of years, never seen my entire life here in this region. So I just wanted to just call in and want to ask a question. That's it.
But the thing is, all this information is classified. Nobody can know what they're doing. We carry a book called HARP, The Ultimate Weapon. We have a four-tape set on HARP. The last thing that people want in positions of control is to people know about this high-altitude auroral research project or what they're doing with the weather. Mm-hmm. But, of course, you control the weather. You can control the nation. God bless. Thanks so much, John.
God bless you, too, sir.
Well, Paul, we've got 3 minutes for you to wrap up the program.
Okay. I want to wrap it up with four questions for the listeners to think about. Those four questions would be this. Number one, is there statistically significant warming? We've already talked about that. There's been, because these are the questions that we have to ask before we decide if we're going to destroy our economy to deal with a problem that may or may not exist. We talked about is there significant warming? If there was, which I don't consider a half a degree very significant, it's gone now. So that would be the first question. But the second question was, if there was warming, was it caused by man? If you look at the actual correlation between temperature and carbon dioxide, there is no significant correlation. Carbon dioxide went up 30%. The temperature went up a half a degree. That's not too much of a direct correlation. It's not a significant enough part of the gases to delay energy transmission. We're not responsible for most of the increase in CO2, and there's a diminishing result as you increase concentrations of CO2. And in fact, if it took 100 parts per million to get the first degree, if you go up the exponential curve of how carbon dioxide treats energy release, it'd take another 90,000 parts per million to get to the next degree of increase, and we'd be dead at 6,000 because it's toxic to us. So no, I don't think it's particularly caused by man. But if it were, if we decided to stop it, is there anything that we can really do about it? Carbon capture and sequestering it remains an unattainable goal. They've been trying to figure out a way to do that for years. But the interesting thing is, thus far, under 15 years of the Kyoto Protocol, with almost every industrialized nation in the world participating in it, there's been no decrease, absolutely none, although there's been hundreds of billions of dollars that have changed hands in carbon credits, there's been no change at all in the emission levels in the atmosphere or the increase of them.
And, of course, the Kyoto Protocol does not cover China, which is the largest single polluter in the world. Why don't we want to do something to China? Very simply, because we do not want to hurt their industrial growth. And China is the largest producer of pollution, and certainly is the one that we will not be affected by the Kyoto Protocol. So I think it's vitally important that people understand that this is a political agenda, and of course it is aimed at destroying the infrastructure of our country. And all we do need to do is remember what Paul said about the president of Czechoslovakia, who came to the conference here to plead with the rest of the world not to do what they'd done to Czechoslovakia and lower the already low standards of the living standards of the people there. Oh, another 40%. Paul, thank you so much for being with us.
You're so welcome.
What a real pleasure. God bless.
Thank you, sir.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. We hope many of you may want to get a copy of the tape here of our interview with Paul, and it's available from Radio Liberty. And then, of course, we carry his book, Climate Crisis All Agore. We have a four-tape set on global warming. We have a DVD on global warming. It's called, but put out by our good friend Michael Kaufman. It's very well done. You'll see actually clips from Al Gore's motion picture, and I think that the DVD does an excellent job. So I can recommend the book, The Climate Crisis, Al Gore, and the DVD, and then of course the four tape set that we provide. We want you to understand what this is about. It is part of this program to deindustrialize America and lower your living standards. If you would like more documentation, let me suggest my talk sustainable development, the road to world government. There's a syllabus that goes with that, the sustainable development syllabus, and Jeannie, who'd called in earlier, is the person who'd actually done a summary of the Global Biodiversity Assessment Report put out as a result of the Second Earth Summit. You'll actually read the Earth Charter, which of course talks about how we're going to have to redistribute the wealth of the world, and they call for equitable distribution of wealth within nations and between nations. So you'll have the Earth Charter, you'll have the World Bank Water Policy, you'll have my treatise on population control, and so much more. You'll actually see the Georgia Guidestones, which recommend eliminating over 90% of the world's population. You'll see the pictures we took when we were there. And, of course, it's interesting that a number of other people have picked up those pictures off our website, which we don't mind at all, and utilize those pictures. You need to understand that there is a master plan, and it's laid out on the Georgia Guidestones. It's laid out in the Earth Charter, and it's laid out in the writings, of course, of the Lucius Trust, which used to be known as the Lucifer Publishing House. And people scoff at them. Well, of course, we've got pictures from the publications of the put out by the Lucifer Publishing House back in the 1920s and 1930s, but they don't want people to understand that there is a Luciferian agenda. So they changed the name to the Lucius Trust. Certainly, if you want to know what the future holds, you need to get our talk. It's a DVD on the planned police state. Because, of course, they know there's going to be terrible unrest in this country. If they're able to proceed with this program to lower our living standards and to impoverish our people. And so they are planning, in the face of civil unrest, to establish a dictatorship. And everything is in place. That's why the DVD is so important. And let me suggest there is an excellent syllabus that goes with that that will introduce you to this other religion. There is another religion out there. There really are people who worship a different God. And, of course, it's all well covered in our talk and certainly in our syllabus on the planned police state. So if you'd like to get into these items, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And certainly our webpage is radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. We hope that you'll go to that website. You can watch many of our DVDs there for nothing. You can listen to our programs for nothing. And we do have a number of programs archived. We have them on MP3. You can listen to the live programs. You can certainly listen to the stream that we send to our satellite 9 hours a day. I do want to mention that our shortwave times will be changing next Monday. If you're listening on shortwave, the 3 to 4 Pacific time, which is 6 to 7 Eastern time, will go to 5.070 the next hour, 4 o'clock Pacific, 7 o'clock Eastern, to 7.465. And this hour, which of course is 8 o'clock Pacific time and 11 o'clock on the East Coast, will go to 5.875. 5.875 or 6.110 megahertz. And of course, if you didn't get them, you can certainly go to our website at radioliberty.com and get the information. So we ask you to pray for America, to pray for revival, but please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Christian civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, and of course, for this next hour, they're going to be the views of Byron Richards, and this is a very important issue we're going to be talking about. Now, before we go on, I certainly want to mention there is going to be a meeting this Saturday. It's going to be at the Doubletree Hotel, just outside of Santa Rosa, and it's going to be a meeting put on by the California chapter of Eagle Forum. And looks like there's going to be a good crowd. I'm going to be speaking not once, but twice. I'm flattered to be asked to speak and to be the master of ceremonies for the evening. Jerome Corsi, Dr. Corsi, is going to be there. Phyllis Schlafly will be there. Michael is going to be there. Michael Shaw, who's a frequent guest here on Radio Liberty, and other excellent guests and speakers. If you're interested in going, it's all day long. It starts at 9 o'clock in the morning and goes till 8 or 9 o'clock at night. There's lunch and dinner will be served. But if you'd like more information, call 707-539-8393. That's 707-539-8393. And if you want more information, you can always call our 800 number, 800-544-8927. Now, right now, let's get to Byron Richards. And he had written an article recently that was just, well, I really couldn't hardly believe it. And so we've checked it out. It's absolutely true. And I'm going to let Byron tell you the mischief that they're up to back in Washington, D.C. Byron, thanks very much for being with us.
Well, it's a pleasure to be with you, Dr. Stan. How are you this evening?
I'm doing just fine. Thank you.
You're right here. This what we're talking about is called the Mothers Act, and it's Bill S-1375. And it's a really diabolical piece of legislation that Big Pharma is trying to usher through Congress under the radar. And by that I mean they have made this bill look like it is the friendliest thing for pregnant and expecting mothers. And all they want to do is just be so nice to them and help them out when their mood gets in a little bit of trouble. The problem, as we know, Dr. Stan, is that when Big Pharma tries to help somebody out, it means give them drugs, and it means that frequently, and then certainly in this case, the side effects of these drugs is extremely dangerous to the unborn child. Essentially, what they want to do is brand 80% of pregnant women in need of psych drugs, antidepressants, the very ones, Dr. Stan, that we've been hearing don't even work.
Amen to that. In fact, what they do many times lead to homicidal and suicidal tendencies on the part of the people who take them. So why would we want to give drugs to people that really are very ineffective, but that do, in certain instances, create homicidal and suicidal tendencies? Remember the woman who killed her 5 children, drowned them all in the bathtub, and she was on these same types of drugs, and now they want to give them to all pregnant women. Well, how certainly are they going to determine who gets the psychiatric drugs, and how are they going to get the women to take them?
Well, the legislation mandates that healthcare professionals of all types, whether in traditional health, midwives, alternative practitioners, individuals dealing with the pregnant woman will have to explain to her that her mood issues should be treated, and antidepressants would be the treatment of choice.
And, of course, in other words, the government is going to force healthcare workers, whether they believe in it or not, to tell women, pregnant women, that they should be getting on these psychiatric drugs prophylactically. Because, of course, they might have emotional problems, but they don't take them. They might even get a postpartum depression, and you know what that means. We're going to be back in just a moment with Byron. This is incredible legislation. Well, Byron, you picked the story up there.
All right. Well, the issue here, Dr. Stan, is that, well, there's several issues, but one of the key issues is that when children or the little babies or the fetuses are exposed to these antidepressants, we know that they cross the placenta, and we enter biologically active levels of these drugs into the evolving nervous system of the fetus. Now, this is quite a serious matter, Dr. Stan, because it's not the same as an adult where the nerves are more established and a bit more mature and a bit more stable. We're talking about the evolving nervous system, and those evolving nerves are making their connections to the heart and to the lungs and to the rest of the body. And we have found that there's a 2% risk for cardiovascular birth defects, an overall 4% risk for birth defects when a mother uses antidepressants, because they actually significantly interfere with the evolving nervous system. And if it's not a latent birth defect, then we know that there are other signs of a failure to thrive, a failure to adapt. There's a higher rate of seizures, respiratory problems, and literally well over 30% of the babies born to a mother who's used antidepressants have serious malnutrition-like syndromes where they're born prematurely, they don't thrive, they don't adapt, they don't do what they're supposed to do, and these are more than just a little symptom. This is problems with how the nervous system has wired the body up to that point. And this legislation, this Mother's Act, would actually encourage women to be on this kind of a medication that has this kind of a known side effect. So the net result of what the senators are currently trying to do is essentially pass legislation that will injure babies.
And, of course, the thing is that, you know, most mothers, if they really knew the potential dangers, a lot of mothers would give up smoking or drinking or anything, of course, during the pregnancy because they wouldn't want to harm their child. But, of course, is there going to be anything there for informed consent where the mother should be told that this will increase their the danger of damaging their child 30%? I bet that's not included in the legislation. I bet there's no informed consent at all.
No, and a lot of this data and a lot of the studies that have been published on the side effects of the medications have been published within the last 6 months, Dr. Stan, which is actually the legislation was crafted before a lot of the studies came out. Any senator with any level of responsibility would say, whoa, wait a minute here. Not only do we have these problems that are now emerging for pregnant mothers and their unborn children, but we also have a whole issue here with the pharma's hidden side effects for 10 years from the public of these antidepressants in all years.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Byron was simply saying that there have been studies now that show that if mothers are on antidepressant drugs during the pregnancy, why at least 30% of their children will have a difficulty as far as failure to thrive and other things, other conditions. Are there any congenital abnormalities? I thought there were some congenital heart abnormalities, Byron.
Well, that's right. In particular, the heart-related side effects are really a problem. And up to 2% of mothers who take these can have this heart defect that can be, you know, they can ruin the health of the child for the entire lifetime.
And of course, what happens as far as the child's mind is concerned? You said that about 30% of them, when the mother is taking these psychiatric drugs, 30% of the children don't thrive. But what does this do as far as their personality, as far as their mentality? Is there increased the incidence of autism or any other neurodegenerative disease?
Well, we know that they have malfunctioning stress tolerance. And when we when the scientists have tested these drugs in mice, who obviously have a shorter lifespan, they have significant stress intolerance and depression as adult mice, specifically from the exposure of these drugs in the gestational period. As far as humans go, we don't have enough track record of these drugs. I mean, they started these newfangled Prozac and Zoloft and so on became popular in the 1990s, but we don't have a whole generation yet of pregnant mothers and data. When they look at the children who are born to mothers who have done this, and they're tracking some of them, they do have abnormal stress tolerance. They do have inability to cope. It's somewhat difficult to pick trends out of them because it's an unfortunate story, but the parents themselves have been stressed and stressful around the children and providing an unstable environment, which was also going on during the pregnancy, which is usually part of the reason for the antidepressants in the first place. So it's a little bit hard to pick out the emerging patterns conclusively, at least at ages 2 and 4, although it is clear that there's something not right.
Well, of course, the thing is, you would think that before they would make a recommendation that would insist, would mandate that, of course, health care providers encourage women, and up to, is this up to 80% of women?
Well, they're trying to redefine postpartum depression and spread it out as a pre-pregnancy condition. And so we know, of course, that when a woman gets pregnant, her thyroid is going to be working overtime, and if she had any problems with that prior pregnancy, or sometimes if she's had a family history, the first time there'll be a problem is when she's pregnant because it has extra work to do. And if she has a poor history with stress tolerance or moods anyway, then the adrenal glands are often stressed. And so we see a lot of women who are not eating right, they're not taking good care of themselves, they have a history with stress, they have a history with thyroid, at least a family history. They get pregnant, and now they're along for the ride for the next 9 months. And so we see there's a lot of things that could be done naturally, of course, to help this out. But, you know, what we have as a society that thinks Big Pharma can just come in. And for some adults, you know, the antidepressants are a quick fix. They boost up levels of neurotransmitters. If they're going to work at all, that's what they do. It's kind of like a credit card on your nervous system. But it's a whole different ballgame when you're pregnant and when you've got a little baby in there that you have to be concerned about, because the side effects not only dangerous to the mother, but very, very dangerous to the unborn child.
Well, now, of course, have you looked into the relationship between the Prozac, Luvox, and these other serotonin uptake inhibitors? Have you looked into that relationship between that and, of course, homicidal and suicidal thoughts? Is this
well,
a real
fact? Well, every single school shooting, the kid that's doing it has been on these psych drugs. And so, you know, that doesn't prove that they're the cause, but there's certainly a lot of guilt by association there because you're either on them or withdrawing or recovering from them. And this has been going on for a number of years. And the bottom line of it is that the physicians who prescribe these things, they don't really even understand what they're doing because the drug companies haven't told them. But when you take Prozac or Zoloft, instead of feeling better, a lot of times you actually feel more anxious, more weird, and the doctors would just say, well, double or triple the dose. Well, of course, this can raise quite a bit of psychiatric-related stress because the person really just wants to get out of their body, literally. I mean, it's a horrible place to be when these psych drugs start to really ramp it up. And it's common that the doctor, when a patient reports they're experiencing this, they tell them to take more. And this, of course, is what's really harming people. In fact, one of the mothers who's been leading the charge here, Amy Fial, that's exactly what happened to her, Dr. Stan, and she's been the one who has been trying to get the word out, and now that she's getting a lot of help here. She has a website at uniteforlife.org where she has a lot of information about the Mothers Act and a petition there that people can go to, Dr. Stan. But she's an example of a mom who's really had a hard time, was treated recklessly by the medical profession, and nearly committed suicide, thought about killing her child, just nasty things. And so she wants to warn other mothers just how bad this can be, and she's doing a pretty good job here of helping to get the word out on this topic across the country, as are we.
One of course says the federal drug and FDA, Federal Drug Administration, authorized this use of the SSRI drugs in pregnant women. I mean, many of these times, you know, they will have certain statements on the package insert that says, we do not know what it'll do. What do they say? Have you had a chance?
You know, I don't actually know the answer to that one in particular. Certainly doctors have the right to prescribe these things in an off-label manner. And they do. They frequently prescribe the SSRI medications during pregnancy. And many times FDA hasn't approved this as a specific use. It's just one of these unspoken things that doctors do, where they give drugs to treat the symptoms, and the real risk-related data or the safety of that has not been proven by the FDA.
Well, of course, it really, you would think that certainly when the drug companies are pushing this legislation, they're not interested in the mothers. They're interested in selling more of their products. I mean, they're making billions of dollars.
Look at the culpability here of the FDA. I mean, the FDA has a responsibility to ensure for the public that the drugs they are using for a given condition are tested in post-market follow-up safety by the drug companies. The drug companies never want to do this testing because it almost always shows the drugs don't work, and then they can't give them anymore. And the FDA acts more like a friend of the drug companies and just lets them get along with this. And so we really don't have the kind of data that should be there for doctors to prescribe these things with any confidence. And all the data we do have, Dr. Stan, is actually quite frightening and would indicate that this shouldn't be given out at all. Here's another thing, though, Dr. Stan. The Senate, the House has already passed this bill, the Mothers Act. The Senate is trying to sneak it through in the beginning of April. And the only thing that's going to stop this is consumers writing into their senators and telling them that this is just for the birds. Now, I'd like to point out, I've made this very easy for anybody to do. Go to my website at www.wellnessresources.com. That's wellnessresources.com. Right on my homepage, you can see a Take Action link. It goes to the CapWiz software. With two clicks of a mouse, you can send a letter to both of your senators opposing S-1375, the Mothers Act. If they hear, we've got close to 5,000 people right now who have sent letters to their senators, Dr. Stan, but we need a lot more. We really need to get up to about 20,000 here before their Easter recess is over, because now that the senators know that there's a broad objection to this going on, they're trying to sneak it through under the radar very fast. They're planning to put it up into the Senate without any chance for amendment, without any debate on the floor. They're just going to ramrod it through the Senate when they come back from the Easter break. That's their current strategy right now. The senators don't want to be called baby injurers. They don't want to be called on the carpet for what they're actually doing, which is passing big pharma-friendly legislation that's going to injure mothers and children, and the taxpayers are going to have to pay for grants to give out all this medication for free. So it's a socialized medicine push at the same time, Dr. Stan.
Well, could you cover that? Because I think that this is one of the most incredible things, is that the women are going to get their Prozac free, but you can be sure they're not going to get good prices. The government's not going to get good prices. In fact, very often government agencies will buy the most expensive drugs. Other agencies will buy cheaper drugs, but government agencies will buy the most expensive drugs. Why? Because they're in bed with the drug companies. What most people don't understand is the Federal Drug Administration gets money, is paid by the drug companies. And there's some sort of relationship there where literally millions of dollars are funneled back to the FDA by the drug companies because, of course, they just don't have enough money to check on all these drugs. And so the drug companies provide it. But certainly the old adage of he who pays the piper calls the tune. And since the drug companies are funding the Federal Drug Administration, the Federal Drug Administration compromises its principles. But here we're going to see not only the damage to the mothers, we're going to see the damage to the children, the unborn children.
Well, and you know what else, Dr. Stan? This legislation, the Mothers Act, actually calls for taxpayers to foot the bill for the biological development of new biotech drugs for pregnant mothers. So the FDA actually really likes this legislation because it's going to enable them to further their agenda, which is to create all these new biotech drugs. That's why Von Eschenbach is the head of the FDA right now. He's in there for one reason and one reason only, and that's to get more of people on really dangerous biotech drugs, and he's trying to create this biotech industry, and that's where all his friends and connections are. So, you know, really, the FDA, in all practical purposes, has become a drug company. It's like having the fox in charge of the hen coop, you know.
And, of course, you know, we know what happens. It's usually the fox ends up eating all the hens and all the hens' eggs. People find it very difficult to believe.
Yeah, well, the hens are the little babies, so keep this in mind.
Well, I think that
we got a problem here. I mean, we're going after people that haven't even been born yet with drugs. What rights do they have?
And they have absolutely no rights. And, of course, when we get back, we're going to be talking a little bit about, do these drugs really work? And do they decrease depression? We'll be back in just a moment here with Byron Richards. Well, Byron, I would ask you the question, what are the studies that show that these psychotropic drugs are better than the placebos? My understanding is that if you evaluate and compare them with placebos, there's maybe only 1 or 2% or maybe 3% at the most of effectiveness of the use of these drugs. Tell us what you found in your studies.
Well, it was just broken as a news story here in the last couple of months by the New York Times and others. A whistleblower within the FDA, who no longer works at the FDA, was well aware that when the SSRI medications became popular in the early 1990s, that the drug companies, number one, hid the suicide data from the FDA. That's been known now due to several lawsuits that have been filed against them. But even so, the data that was originally given to the FDA support the use of the drugs, which the FDA then approved, half that data never got published in the scientific literature. And the half that didn't get published, it should be no surprise to anybody, were all the negative studies that showed that these drugs didn't really do anything. So when you combine the studies that did get published with the studies that didn't get published, the net result is that only in very, very severe depression could these drugs do anything, even in the remotely positive aspect, compared to placebo, meaning for mild depression, moderate depression, anxiety issues, baby blues, all the things they want to use these things for and give them to the pregnant women, they don't do anything. So they don't even have any real proof of working at all. And, of course, the drug companies have been able to keep the lids on this now for almost 15 years. Well, now that their patents are about to expire and they've made their billions scamming people, they don't really care anymore. But they want to go after new target markets like pregnant mothers or children with the antipsychotic medications. They've had success doing that over the last 4 or 5 years. That's why Eli Lilly with Zyprexa, they make $4 billion a year. 25% of the company's profit is raping Medicare and Medicaid, poisoning kids in orphanages, poisoning adults in retirement living or nursing homes with these drugs and having Medicare and Medicaid pay for them. So they see there's this wonderful market opportunity to get these psych drugs being paid for in public situations. That's how they can make money. That's what they're now trying to do with their antidepressants, and they're trying to commit taxpayers to pay Big Pharma to develop new drugs, which cost billions of dollars to develop, quite frankly. And then once the taxpayers pay to develop the drugs, then they're going to pay Big Pharma to give the drugs. We pay to develop them.
And I think people have to really understand, there's a wonderful book we carry. It's called What You Should Know About the Drug Companies. It's written by Dr. Marcia Angel, who's on the staff at Harvard, who is formerly the editor of the New England Journal of Medicine, certainly the single most prestigious journal in medicine today. And Marcia Angel pointed out that most of the research on drugs is done by the FDA. It's paid for with your tax money. And once the FDA has developed drugs, then they turn them over to the drug companies to run some studies to see if they're effective. And, of course, the drug companies are allowed to market them. And they make billions of dollars a year. You look at the profits. Certainly, many of our major corporations are not making money. Our automotive industry is losing money. But Big Pharma is making the largest profits of any concern and any producer in the United States today. We'll be back here in just a moment with Byron. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Byron was simply saying that there have been a number of studies. There was one actually released by the New York Times recently and several other publications pointing out that 15 years ago there were double-blind studies. One group of patients would get SSRI, the other would get a placebo. And there was maybe 1 or 2% at the most difference between those who got the placebo and those, of course, who got the SSRI drugs. And so unless you're dealing with a very, very, very severe depression, these drugs do absolutely no good any more than a sugar pill would. But they can't let the American people or the doctors know that, and so they concealed all of the studies. They lied to the doctors, and they lied to the patients, and they lied to the public about it, and that's rather devastating. especially when we know that these drugs actually increase the incidence of homicidal and suicidal ideas in people, and actually many of these people have committed horrible crimes under the influence of the drugs. Many people have actually committed suicide under the influence of the drugs, and there have been a number of lawsuits, haven't there, Byron?
Well, there have been a lot of lawsuits, and there have been a lot of unfortunate situations where lives have simply been snuffed out. Whether we see these horrendous shows of homicide or on television or just more personal, there's been a lot of stories where people have been injured seriously by the psychiatric medications, and we find that Big Pharma consistently has withheld their known data, that they knew these were going to be problems. And the Big Pharma executives, I tell you, Dr. Stan, if the Big Pharma executives knew that they'd be tried for involuntary manslaughter when their drugs killed people, when they knew they could kill people, and they didn't tell the FDA or the doctors that this is a known risk based on data they have in their hands, if they knew they were going to face actual criminal charges, they wouldn't do this. But they do this with impunity. They know that they have faced nothing, but at the most, very, very most, is they lose their sales. And then sometimes they get to pay lawsuits for damages, but they just tie that up in court, and it drags on and on and on and on. It's all, quote-unquote, a cost of doing business. They just factor the cost of potential lawsuits into the price of their drugs and set aside a certain amount of money and then keep right on injuring people. And, the fact, though, that we now have the Senate of the United States of America dictating how medical care should be given to pregnant nursing mothers is beyond belief. Like these bozo clowns actually know something about medicine. It is absolutely absurd. And, what they really want to do here, in the case of this legislation, is they're trying to move our country into a socialist, big pharma-dependent situation. I mean, Dr. Stan, I'm not opposed to health care for everyone. I'm opposed to health care for everyone that's based on the theory of big pharma drugs. That's the problem I have, because that will bankrupt our country, number one, and it will kill people all over the place. We already have 100,000 people a year dying from the side effects of drugs and medications, over 3 million people winding up in emergency rooms with reactions that are just horrendous to these things. And the more we mandate that people can just use these things at taxpayer expense, well, somebody's got to pay for it. It's going to be the working families of America to pay for all these drugs to be given to everybody.
Well, I think one of the perfect examples of this was the Vioxx scandal in Merck. Certainly Dr. David Graham, who was in charge of drug safety at the FDA, knew this was a dangerous drug. He was ordered by his superiors not to let the information out, saying that they wanted to work closely with Merck. Of course they did. Merck was giving the FDA money, and of course many of the people who worked for the FDA, if they were good, why, when they retired from the government, they'd go to work for Merck and get a tremendous salary. Well, anyway, Dr. David Graham, and you can actually read his testimony on my website. I've reproduced the testimony he gave before the United States Senate. You can go up on my webpage and find it there. But basically, he estimated that the Vioxx was going to kill 60,000 Americans. And, of course, it already had. One of the people at the Cleveland Clinic figured the figure was closer to 160,000 Americans. And, of course, eventually Merck did withdraw the medication. And, of course, they're going to make a settlement. They're going to give about $4 billion. But they made probably three or four times that amount out of the drug that they knew was killing people. They had the records. 60,000 Americans killed by a drug, or was it 160,000? Nobody knows. Nobody cares. They're going to give them a few $1 billion, and the lawyers will end up with most of it. And well, what about all those destroyed lives, the people with heart attacks or with strokes and in chronic incapacity? What we're dealing with is crass indifference to human suffering. And please, if you have a chance, go to our website, RadioLiberty.com. Pull down Dr. David Graham's testimony and read it, and then weep and understand that it is not simply with Vioxx, but it is with so many of the other drugs that are there. And Byron's on the front lines trying to warn people what's going on. And we want you to, we'll tell you in just a few minutes how to get to his website, get his information. I commend it to you. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Byron Richards. And Byron, about 3 minutes, boy, we'll have all of our stations back with us, and then we want to get the information out about what you're doing and about your books and the other information you have. But certainly at this time, do you think that we're making headway? Are more and more people understanding the danger of this bill that's being put forward by Senator Lieberman, one of his compatriots, that would force health care providers to advise certainly pregnant and nursing women that they should be taking these psychotropic drugs, when of course it's only going to harm the unborn child, and certainly number 2% of the children are going to end up with heart defects, and 30% of them are going to develop some sort of psychiatric or mental problems? Are people understand the implications of this?
I think people are starting to catch on. I mean, when people listen to a show like this, Dr. Stan, they may be hearing about it for the first time. But it's alarming. I'm alarmed by it. You're alarmed by it. Everybody that hears about it is kind of stunned by it. And your first reaction is, well, is this even really possible that something like this could be going on in this country, where you would be exposing fetuses to neurologic, cardiovascular, respiratory, nervous system damage, just so Big Pharma can make money selling drugs to pregnant women? I mean, does this really make sense? And it's a stunner. You think, well, there would be checks and balances in place in our society, but it's not the case. Both Republicans and Democrats, both sides of the political aisle, are owned by Big Pharma. And until people understand this, so they can get laws through, and this is an attempt of Big Pharma to get a law through that mandates a kind of treatment that's extremely dangerous and very profitable for Big Pharma. And, you know, they've sugarcoated it. They've made it sound like it's just the most helpful bill. It's really going to help moms out. And that's how these senators are signing on to it. They just think they're going to look good. Well, I got news for them. You're all going to be known. All these senators who sign off on this thing are going to be known as the senators that pass legislation that injures babies. And they need to be known this way. The word needs to get out. People need to go to my website at wellnessresources.com and send a letter right now to your senator. Two clicks of a mouse and you can do it. Say no to the Mothers Act. If you want to know more about the Mothers Act, I have an article on that posted on my website. If you want to know more about the actual studies that show the dangers of these drugs, I have all of them on my website in an article, Dangers of Psych Meds During Pregnancy. All of the information is there. There's no reason that anybody can't easily have either enough.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Byron Richards. And Byron is one of those people who's on the front lines trying to warn the American people about the dangers of so many things happening in medicine today. Byron, I want you to give your website out. I want you to talk a little bit about your books, and then tell people how they can get the material on the Mothers Act, and of course how they can of course get on your website, and simply with two clicks of a mouse send a note, send a email to their senator, and when we get enough emails there, maybe some of these senators might step back and look at the harm they're doing, because people must understand there really are people who want to harm children. And as incredible as it may seem, we can say, well, it's just about profit. No, I believe there are people who do have a different worldview. In fact, I'll never forget one time, you know, talking when I was a member of the House of Delegates, the California Medical Association, and I certainly had put forward a resolution that women should be advised of the possibility that if they had a first-term abortion, that they might increase their incidence of breast carcinoma. Of course, all the studies really demonstrated it wasn't a possibility, it was a fact. But the people on the other side, you know, opposed my efforts. And when I asked one woman, doctor, why, she looked at me with the coldest, most evil eyes I ever saw, and she said, "You don't understand. We have a different worldview." And that's absolutely right. There are people who look at the world differently, and I believe that they see nothing wrong with harming either women or children. They have a different agenda. Well, Byron, let's get your website out again. Let's get your material on your books out, and just to take a moment or two here to acquaint people with who you are and what you do.
Well, absolutely. The bill we're talking about is S-1375. It's called the Mothers Act. It's going to indoctrinate women into taking psych drugs during pregnancy, up to 80% of women. This legislation is trying to brand pregnancy as mental illness. It's a big pharma piece of legislation. It's insane. It must be stopped. You can do that by registering your protest. My website is www.wellnessresources.com. That's wellnessresources.com. Right on my homepage, you got to take action. You can go right to the CapWiz software with two clicks of a mouse. You got a letter off to both your senators. We need thousands of you to participate in this. The 11th hour is now. The House has already passed this. The bill's in the Senate Health Committee. And it's going to come out of that behind closed doors and be snuck through the Senate in the first week or two when they get back from the Easter recess. So the time is now. It's not tomorrow. It's not 1 week from now. I mean, we need everybody to take action right now. On my website, I keep you up to date on the breaking health news, I'm an expert in all of this, so I tell you what it actually means so that you can be better informed on how to take care of yourself.
Well, I appreciate so much that you are on the front lines of this. Of course, Byron had written an excellent article. I believe it was in newsofviews.com, wasn't it?
Yes, I published my articles on newsofviews.com, so I have a couple of them up there right now, my last two. One is called Branding Pregnancy with Mental Illness, and then my most recent drug, The Dangers of Psych Meds During Pregnancy. Both of these are about the Mother's Act. We've had a lot of support also from Mike Adams over at naturalnews.com. He's posted my articles. John Hamill at the International Associates for Health Freedom, IAHF.com, is working on this. Amy Filo, a mom who's really been carrying the brunt of this for months, she's got her website at uniteforlife.org, and so there's been quite a coming together of a lot of the grassroots trying to get the word out on this. But we really need all the listeners out there to participate in this campaign, because it's just so critically important that your senators know that you are in fact opposed to having pregnant women just randomly and under the encouragement of big pharma, up to 80% of women they want on antidepressants, even though the data shows that these antidepressants can seriously injure babies and cause significant malnourishment and pregnancy malfunction in at least 30% of pregnancies. So this is a horrendous public health issue that big pharma is just trying to sneak through for profit, Dr. Sand. It is a horrendous piece of legislation.
I think it is, too, and I think, of course, the fact that they're actually going to be giving donations and payoffs to a lot of the politicians. Of course, they wouldn't call it that. They're simply donating to their reelection campaign, but that's really what it is. It is a payoff. And I do not believe there should be legislation that prevents this sort of thing. I don't think that anybody who has anything to do with legislation that would benefit from legislation be allowed to pay our senators and congressmen, because we have the finest legislators money could buy.
Well, that's about the story. We have two big pharma lobbyists for every member of Congress. And that's a sad scenario, but it's true. Tens of millions of dollars of money are spent lobbying senators, buying them, and twisting their arms, and bamboozling them. And, we've got different agendas going on. This Mother's Act is co-sponsored by both Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. And, their motivation apparently for doing it is just to lock more people into dependence on the federal government. It doesn't seem to matter to them that their legislation is going to injure babies. And so, but, you know, don't make any mistake about this. It's not just Democrats. It's Republicans who are also in favor of this. And Bush will sign it in a heartbeat because he's for anything that makes more money for Big Pharma.
Okay, so I think the interesting thing is that both Hillary and Obama are in favor of this legislation, despite the fact it hurts babies. Well, maybe it's because it hurts babies. Both of these people are, of course, anti-life. Both of them support abortion. Both of them support partial birth abortion, where, of course, the child is partially delivered, healthy, viable child, and then it can be killed. Well, I would see no reason at all why they wouldn't be strongly in favor of legislation that hurts children. There are people who have a different worldview, and I think until we recognize that, it's very difficult to understand what's going on. Now, I think most of our senators really don't understand it. They just want to get large contributions from the drug companies. But, of course, we're the ones who are going to pay the bill, and it's going to be our wives and our sisters or our mothers are going to certainly have to suffer because of this. And then those children, I mean, what's going to happen to them as their lives develop? And those, I said, 2% of them with congenital heart defects associated with taking these mothers, taking these medications, that alone should certainly discourage this sort of medication.
This is unbelievable. And the politics is there. It's real. You know, both Republicans and Democrats support Big Pharma for different reasons. Big Pharma's got everything paid. They don't really care who's in power, Dr. Stan, because they have different angles. I mean, when the Democrats get in, it's more socialized care. That's always good for Big Pharma sales. When the Republicans are in, they're protected against being even investigated. When the Republicans are in power, they just wreak damage randomly. And, of course, Bush puts through, you know, the Medicare tax plan where we can't even negotiate the drug prices with the drug companies. I mean, it's all about money. And, of course, Bush and Bush's father, former President Bush, they're in bed with the drug companies. They have been for decades.
Well, certainly
it's all about money being shifted wherever it goes. And
is Father Bush still on the board of Eli Lilly? I know he was for a time.
You know, I don't believe he's still on the board, but what he has done, he started this group called Sea Change, which is in charge of the $50 billion a year cancer industry. And Andrew von Eschenbach, who's the head of the FDA, was the man that President Bush had running, or the former president had running Sea Change, and then because of his relationship with the elder Bush, the new Bush put him into the head of the FDA. And so it was like unlocking the keys to the door to the FDA, to the drug companies. And so now we have a situation where Big Pharma sales reps are at the very top positions of the FDA. This is why all of this ludicrous Looney Tunes stuff is able to go on. The FDA has no interest in doing its actual job. They're actually trying to figure out how to expose people to new and dangerous drugs, which is why they have written into the Mothers Act that you, the taxpayer, will pay for their new dangerous biologic drugs to be developed at taxpayer expense so that Big Pharma can experiment on pregnant and postpartum moms.
And of course, this gives incest a bad name, you know. This gives incest a bad name. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you're out there and you have a question for Byron, the Mothers Act is a very, very dangerous act. Certainly the SSRI drugs, the serotonin inhibitor drugs, certainly are dangerous, and we are really very, very concerned giving them to anybody, but giving them to a pregnant woman, I certainly is beyond the pale. Our number again, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295, and we welcome your questions for Byron, because he's on the front lines of this battle. We need to get this information out. You need to tell others. You need to go to his website, and that's wellnessresources.com. That's wellnessresources.com. Won't take you that long to send the email, and, of course, you could be saving the life of a child, an unborn child. So anyway, of course, are you doing a lot of talk radio at the present time, Byron?
I've been making the rounds on different stations. I'll be on this weekend. Of course, we're doing another program. I'll be on this weekend with Jonathan Emord, who's, of course, the leading health freedom attorney in our country. And his radio program, he's invited me to be on and talk about the Mothers Act. And I'll be on the following week with Robert Scott Bell over on the East Coast. And so, you know, I mean, there's definitely interest. I'm going to be on Mike Adams at National News. He's got a new radio program going out all over the place, and I'll be on with him in a week or so here, also talking about it. So people are hearing about it, but it really is going to require a massive grassroots objection here to this going on, because the senators have to know. I mean, your vote really matters. Anytime you send an email to the senators, they think one email equals 100,000 people who feel the way you do. That's how they count and tally these things. We've got over, we've got close to 5,000 letters sent in so far. So that's 10,000 senators have gotten, you know, because it's 5,000 people sending two letters. And but we need more, Dr. Stan. We need to really bump this up here in the next week or two. And our goal is to get up to the 20,000 mark, which is doable, especially people tell their friends. It's real easy, because when you do the Capwiz software, it takes you just a second to send it in, and then if you want, you can notify your friends about this right from that software, and so they can take action immediately as well, too. So it's a great program that really helps get the letters to the senators so they know that you don't like pregnant women being a target of big pharma at taxpayer expense, especially when babies are going to be injured and mothers are going to really struggle as a result of this. So go to my website, wellnessresources.com. Right on the home page, take action. It's real easy. Just click on it, and away you go. It won't take more than a minute of your time. Please help stop the Mother's Act.
Well, let's go to Amy, who's calling us from Frisco, Texas. Hi, Amy. How are you doing?
Hey, you guys. Thanks so much for doing this show. This is Amy Philo.
Amy, hi.
Say hi to Byron and hi to
Amy's the one who's been leading the charge along with everyone else here, Dr. Stan. Great to have her on.
Yeah, I just want to emphasize that if anyone's out there listening and they are a victim, like I became a victim a few years ago, if they could go to my website and get my email address and let me know, because I want more people coming forward, and we need to stop this now. And I also have a petition that has over 6,000, almost 7,000 signatures now, that we need so many more, and it only takes a couple of minutes to sign that.
Amy, tell us a little bit about what you went through as a mom. You had your first child. You weren't feeling good. What happened?
Well, it was all kind of ridiculous looking back, because I never should have been put on Zoloft in the first place, but I actually started taking it when I was only 6 days postpartum, because my baby had almost died right before my eyes when he was 3 days old, and he started choking when he tried to throw up on some formula. And within 3 days of taking Zoloft, I had a hallucination of killing him, and I went to the psych hospital, and I was there for a couple of days, and they convinced me to stay on the drug, even though I was kind of suspicious of it. They said there's no way I could be safe if I didn't stay on it. So I stayed on it for 5 months. I raised my dose twice, and each time that I raised my dose, because my doctor told me to, the thoughts of homicide got way more intense. And by the end of the whole experience, I was like imagining killing my entire family and my cats, and even killing my neighbors and committing suicide. So I finally just like looked into it some more and found out that this was a common thing that happens to people, and realized that it wasn't me. I wasn't actually a crazy person, and I decided to taper off of it. So I did so over a few weeks, and then I went back to being the regular, normal person that I am.
Well, Amy, I would love to get you onto one of our radio programs after we let you go. Would you mind staying on the line? I'll see if I get my producer to get your telephone number. We'll call you. We'd love to get you to tell this story to people all across America, because I think that this is one of the most dangerous drugs, the SSRI. And if we don't get the information out, why, they're going to continue using this on the American people.
Yeah, and a lot of people are forced to take it. It's really scary. Make sure everyone knows to go to uniteforlife.org to get the petition also, and make sure you sign that letter on Byron's website.
That's unitedforlife.org, is that it?
It's Unite for Life.
Uniteforlife.org.
Right.
All right.
Yeah, there's a lot of really good stories on that website, too, that Amy's put up about other situations, not only her story, but another child, Manny, who was injured with the cardiovascular side effects.
Yeah, that one's really sad. It makes you cry to watch the videos. Oh, also tonight I added a link on the very top of the page about a study in Sweden that showed 80% of all adult suicides were from people taking psychiatric drugs.
Well, of course, if you believe in population control, this should certainly be an advantage. Anything else you'd like to say, Amy, before we let you go?
Just thank you so much for doing the show, and everyone go sign the petition and call your senators as soon as possible.
All right, Amy, would you hang on the line? I'm going to see if I can get our producer to pick you up. Okay.
Okay,
then let's see. I'll see if I get Andy to get the telephone number of Amy. Well, our guest this evening has been Byron Richards. And, of course, we've been talking about the Mothers Act that has already passed the House of Representatives. You haven't heard about it because, of course, they don't want you to know. And then, of course, we are also suddenly seeing this thing. It should be getting through the Senate before long. And when it does, once these things become law, why, it is very, very difficult, of course, to do anything about them. And it'll cost billions of dollars down the line. It will do irreparable harm both to the mothers and to the unborn children. And we can put a stop to this foolishness if there are enough people out there who care. So I'd suggest you go to Byron's website, and that's wellnessresources.com. Is that right, Byron?
That's right, Dr. Stan, and we've got the Take Action letter right there.
Okay, hold on.
As Amy was saying, she has a petition on her website that's also helpful. It's a little different.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. All right, Byron, you got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, Dr. Stan, it's been a pleasure to be on with you this evening talking about this Bill S-1375, the Mothers Act. For those of you just tuning in, that is a bill that seeks to mandate a kind of care where pregnant and nursing mothers will, in fact, be indoctrinated. Up to 80% of them are the target for the use of psychiatric medication. These drugs are not only extremely dangerous to a lot of the moms, personally, because they wind up their nerves, they don't behave in any kind of a textbook fashion, they actually raise and make a mom more depressed and feel strange and raise anxiety, and it is well known, and Big Pharma knows, that in these situations, it's often preferable to be dead or to kill than to just keep going. And so that's the nasty side effects of these drugs when they don't work. And we know that it's at least half the women who take them that have shades of this problem. So it's a huge problem. So to get 80% of women who are pregnant or in the postpartum phase taking these things, when we already know that half the women who will take them are going to have problems, we're exposing hundreds of thousands of women to serious problems. On top of that, they're babies. Giving these psychotropic drugs to the evolving nervous system of a fetus is extremely dangerous. It disrupts the normal function of the heart, the lungs, the nervous system. It can affect behavior for a lifetime. It's just a nasty, nasty problem. And senators are rubber stamping this because they're in the pocket of Big Pharma. And unless we let them know that we know they're going to injure babies and mothers, and that's how we see them, as baby injurers, that's the only thing they care about is their reputation, because they'd much rather have money from Big Pharma and smile at you while they're stabbing you in the back. The only way they stop anything is if their reputation's at stake. Go to my website, wellnessresources.com. Click on the Take Action. Send the letters to your senators. If you're struggling with this topic yourself, look at some of my helpful tips on my website. I've got great information about stress and natural options for mood and prenatal nutrition and postpartum nutrition.
Do you have anything at all on schizophrenia? Is there any way nutritionally to help a patient with schizophrenia?
Well, there are. Schizophrenia is a little different issue. It's a little more difficult because a lot of the underlying nerves have been thrown for a loop. But a lot of, I mean, the commonality now, Dr. Stan, that we're finding, the most advanced science on nerves shows that it's energy itself. That is what's running the nervous system.
Hold on, though. We're going to have to let you go. Thanks very much for being with us. Bye-bye.
It's been a pleasure, Dr. Stan.
Bye-bye.
You take care and have a great evening.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. I hope you enjoyed the program, if you can enjoy a program such as this. But this is not unusual at all. Certainly we mentioned the book that we carry called What You Should Know About the Drug Companies by Marcia Angel, former the editor of the New England Journal of Medicine, certainly with Harvard University, and of course says she's been tracked and harassed by the drug companies because she dared to tell the truth about how they were simply exploiting the situation and making profits on drugs that they didn't even produce. In other words, they didn't do the research on. It's all done by the government, and the profits, of course, go to the drug companies. And I hate to sound like a radical, but the truth of the matter is, this is exactly the way the game's played. The book, What You Should Know About the Drug Companies, by Marshall Angel, when these are out of print, oh, I suspect they'll never be reprinted again, because everything is possible has been done to discredit Marshall Angel for daring to tell the American people the fact that they are being cheated, and of course their health is being injured by Big Pharma. Well, of course, we certainly have a great deal of information available on our website. Going into the background of what you need to do to be healthy, we have certainly a four-tape set with Russell Blaylock, Life-Saving Health Secrets. We carry Dr. Blaylock's book, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life. Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life. We carry his book on excitotoxins, his book on natural strategies for cancer patients. And believe me, ladies and gentlemen, the cancer industry is an industry that has been created. If you go back to the beginning of the last century, 1 in 33 people got cancer. Today, 1 in 2 people get cancer. Did that just happen by accident? Did you know, for instance, that if you drink milk regularly as an adult, your incidence of breast carcinoma can go up eight times increase in breast cancer and 4 or 5% increase in prostatic cancer? And they know that. They just don't want the public to know that. That's covering in Sidney Jeffrey Smith's most recent article. You can pull it down at newswithviews.com, or if you can't get it, we'll be glad to provide it for you. They know, for instance, the first trimester abortion. Several of these dramatically increases the incidence of breast cancer in women that have never had a child, but everything is done to suppress this information. Why? Well, because there are too many people in the world, ladies and gentlemen. There are really too many people in the world, at least according to the people on the other side. The people who have a different worldview because they worship a different god. If you haven't heard my talks on None Dare Call It Genocide, if you haven't heard my talk on planned population reduction or my talk on population control, let me recommend them to you. We have a great four-tape set on population control. And then, of course, we have the Population Control Agenda monograph. It's up on my webpage at RadioLiberty.com. But if you get into the other items, Chris would be glad to send you a free copy of the Population Control Agenda monograph. And then I want to mention the book, pardon me, a DVD by Dr. David Ayoub. It's called Mercury, Autism, and the Global Population Agenda. Mercury, Autism, and the Global Population Agenda. And David simply asked the question, well, you know, if the people who are pushing population control and really believe there are too many people in the world, why are they financing the vaccine programs for third world children? Because if you think there are too many people in the world, why would you want to protect them from disease? Why would you want to protect the children from disease? When you get, of course, the DVD, which is a devastating DVD, well, you'll also get included a CD-ROM with literally thousands of pages there of the scientific evidence of the damage that's done by mercury, the destruction of the minds of our children. The people at the CDC know it. The people at the FDA know it. But, of course, they do not want the American public to know that they're poisoning our children with mercury in our vaccines, and they still have it in the vaccines. Don't believe for 1 minute it's been taken out. It is in the flu shots, and that's what you'll get unless you specifically request, of course, mercury-free vaccines. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Please pray for Radio Liberty.